Okay, well, this is the place then where I will do it, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's in the book of Genesis, chapter 32 at this point, and we have worked our way through the third of the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and of course, this one, Jacob, or Yaakov. And what we're going to see this week is a number of things that are going to literally set up the fourth of the major players in the book of Genesis. And also, of course, it's going to see the renaming of Yaakov to the one we probably even know better. And it begins like this in Genesis 32, verse 4. Vayishlach Yaakov. And sent Yaakov messengers. Malachim. Oh, there's that word. Not angels in this case, because they look like they're probably human messengers, but they're still Malachim. Before him, to his brother Esau, into the land of Seir, the field of Edom. And there's a reminder here that I have in my margin that I think is important. Remember when his mom, Rebecca, said she would send for him whenever it is that Esau kind of cooled his heels and decided he wasn't anxious to kill his brother? Well, she never sent for him. So you got to wonder, there's a number of possible reasons why that is, and I'm sure that is on his mind as well. So he commanded these messengers, saying, look, here's what you're going to say to my lord Esau. Thus says your servant Yaakov. I have sojourned with Laban, I stayed there until now, and I have oxen and asses and flocks and men servants and maid servants, and I have sent to tell my lord, meaning Esau, that I might find favor in your sight. So the messengers returned to Jacob, and they said, hey, now here's where you could almost, you know, play that old game and say, we got good news and bad news. The good news is we came to your brother Yaakov. The bad news, moreover, he is coming to meet you, and he has 400 men with him. So as you might suspect, that's mostly bad news. Yaakov, it says, was greatly afraid and was distressed. And here's another one of those interesting places I always like to comment on. Greatly afraid and distressed. Those sound kind of semi-redundant, right? Or aren't they? And the key is, there is a midrash that suggests, I think this is pretty reasonable, that there are two conflicting emotions that he has. One, he's greatly afraid. Is he afraid of dying or having to kill his brother? Either way, it's kind of a lose-lose, right? He is distressed. So he's distressed about one, arguably, and afraid about the other, either killing or dying. And both of them are kind of negative if you follow the logic through. So he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks, and the herds, and the camels, into, this is an interesting one, two camps. Okay? Lishni. Okay, we know that word. That's two, right? Shni, Machanot, two camps. Now, the reason I think this is kind of fascinating is because there's a certain amount of prefacing here, almost like shadows of things to come. If you realize, eventually Yaakov is going to be divided. Matter of fact, still is divided into two camps. We have the camp of the north, Israel; the camp of the south, Judah, or literally, the kings of Ephraim and of the kings of Judah that came out of these his loins, out of these 12 tribes. It's kind of interesting. But here it is. We see the first place where they are divided into two camps. He said, if Esau comes and takes care of one camp and smites it, then the camp which is left might just then escape. And Yaakov said, O Elohim, Elohi, literally my God, of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Yahuwah, who said to me, return, shuv, go back to your own country and your kin, and I will do you good. Now, how is he praying? He's reminding Yah of exactly what he was told. You go back to your own country, and I'll do you good. I'm not worthy of all the mercies, all the truth which you've shown unto your servant, for with my staff I have passed over this Jordan. Now I have become again Lishni, Machanot, two camps. So deliver me, I pray you, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and smite me, the mother, along with the children. And you did say, I will surely do you good, and make your seed as the sand of the sea, which can't be numbered for multitude. So Yaakov lodged that night. He took of that which he had, basically of his own flocks and herds, as a present for Esau, his brother. So here's what he's going to do. He's going to send 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats. So that's a 10 to 1 more she-goats than he-goats. And if you think about it, because the she-goats can give milk and give birth, they're more valuable. It just takes one he-goat to service a whole lot of she-goats. So he's given a lot more of the more valuable. 200 he-goats, 200 she-goats, 20 he-goats, along with 200 ewes, another 10 to 1 ratio, and 20 rams. He gave 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. So a major gift to his brother. He delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and he said to those servants, "Pass over before me, put a space between drove and drove." So space them out. Send him. He wants basically Esau to be impressed with all the stuff that's coming to him. Then he commanded the foremost, and he said, "Look, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, 'Whose are you? And whither are you going? Oh, you know, where are you headed? And whose are these before you?' Here's what I want you to say. Surely you'll say, 'They are your servant Yaakov's, and it's a present sent unto my Lord, even unto you, Esau. And behold, he's come a lot behind us here.' So he commanded also the second and the third and all the following droves, and he said, 'In this manner you shall speak unto Esau when you find him. And moreover, you say, Behold, your servant Yaakov is behind us, because he said to himself,'" now this is Yaakov, in other words, speaking, "I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I'll see his face. Just maybe, peradventure, he will accept me." So the present Passover before him, he himself lodged that night in the camp. And he rose up that night, he took his two wives and his two handmaids and his 11 children, and he passed over the ford of the Yavach. And he took them, and he sent them over the stream, and he sent over that which he had, until Yaakov was left alone. And there he wrestled with an ish, a man, until the breaking of the day. Now here, of course, as you might suspect, there is all kinds of midrash. Who is the man that he is wrestling with? Is it a messenger? Is it some kind of an incarnation of Yah himself? Is it his own emotions? Some of the more Jewish midrash says it's the Yetzir Hara. You've heard that, the evil inclination. If you've seen the cartoons when we were kids, some of us anyway, where there's a little good angel on one shoulder and a little bad angel on the other shoulder. This is the Yetzir Tov, the little good thing, and the Yetzir Hara, famous, the evil inclination. So anyway, that's one of the things they will say maybe he's wrestling with. But regardless, he definitely has an active night. And then when this messenger, or this person, this Ish, saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. The hollow of Yaakov's thigh was strained as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, because dawn is breaking." And said Yaakov, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" Well, and he answered, "Yaakov." And he said, "Your name no longer shall be called Yaakov, but Israel, because you have striven with Elohim and with men, and you have prevailed." Now, another rendering of this says, "You have the power of El and of men." And read it either way. I think reading it both ways kind of gives you a little different understanding that if you read it one way or the other. But the bottom line is, he is wrestling. He is dealing with his faith before Yah, and he's wrestling, obviously, with men and with the fears that men have and the concern about his brother. So no doubt about it, there is a lot going on, and the man has had a busy night. So Yaakov asked this Ish, and he said, "Well, tell me, I pray, what's your name?" Well, the answer is, "Why are you asking my name?" Didn't answer him. And he blessed him there. Yaakov then called the name of that place Peniel, "For I have seen El face to face, and my life is preserved." And then it says, the sun. And it's interesting, this is the same root here, Shemesh, as servant, rose upon him as he passed over Peniel. And now, Yaakov, from here out, he limps upon his thigh. But he's not done yet. "Therefore, the children of Israel do not eat," it says at the end of the chapter here, "the sinew of the thigh vein upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because that Ish touched the hollow of Yaakov's thigh, even the sinew of the thigh vein." So, where does that leave us? Well, the dawn has come up. Esau lifts up his eyes and looks, and behold, here comes his brother Esau, with him 400 men. And he divided the children, his children, unto Leah and unto Rachel and to the two handmaids. He put the handmaids and their children up front. So Bilhah and Zilpah are going to go first, and then after that, Leah and her children. Finally, Rachel and Joseph in the last drove. And he himself passed over before them. He bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he finally came near to his brother. Now, this next verse is an interesting one. We're going to see here one of the jots and tittles. As a matter of fact, one of the most famous of the jots and tittles, the dots themselves above these words here. And in the English, I'll read it and tell you where the dots are. You don't see it in English Bibles. That's kind of an interesting, I guess you'd say, omission. I've never seen an English Bible that puts them in. I'm sure there's some somewhere, but I don't have any. I can't recall any that list footnotes for these. And you'd think that there'd be at least some that would. But it says this in the Hebrew: and Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell upon his neck. And here you go. And kissed him. The words "and kissed him" are have dots, 4 dots above the words. Now, some of the sages will say that means that those words can be removed without changing the meaning, but I think it does change the meaning. The question is, if you put the dots in there and take it out and put them back in, does it give you a different understanding? Well, so here's where you've probably heard some of the different midrashim on this one. I say take them all with a grain of salt, personally. But he wept upon his neck, he fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. So here's the question, right? What is going through both of the brothers' minds at this point? Does he kiss him sincerely or insincerely? Or is he ambivalent about it? And I can't help but think, yeah, it does make sense after all of these years and the anger and the frustration and the joy that they're both still alive. And also this pain, this bittersweet reconciliation, the gifts, and the fact that both of them seem to have grown up quite a bit in the interim. There's no doubt about it. There's a major mixture of emotions here. So to me, that seems to be what the dots really are saying. Okay, if you've never heard it, one of the midrashes says, well, maybe he intended to bite. Esau intended to bite Jacob on the neck, and his neck was turned to marble, and so he couldn't bite him. Honestly, I don't buy that. But in any case, there is no doubt about it. Some powerful emotion happening here, and they wept. So he lifted up his eyes, and he saw the women and the children. He said, whose are these that are with you? And responded the other, which would be Yaakov, the children whom Elohim has graciously given your servant. Notice he's still being very supplicative. The handmaids then came near, they and their children, they all bowed down. Then Leah with her children, they came near, they bowed down. After that came Joseph near, and Rachel, and they bowed down. And he said, what do you mean by all of this camp which I met? And then a response, I would find favor in the sight of my Lord. Well, says Esau, I have enough, my brother. You just hang on to that which you have. Let what you have be yours. And said Yaakov, no, I pray you, if I have now found favor in your sight, well, then receive my present at my hand. For as much as I have seen your face, as one sees the face of Elohim, and you were pleased with me. So please take, I pray, my blessing, my gift, brach. Okay, so the root word here is brach, right? To my blessing, brach, my blessing to you. Because Elohim has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And so he urged him, and Esau took it. And then he said, let's take our journey, go, and I'll go before you. Well, the response, this is Yaakov again, it sounds like. My Lord knows that the children are tender, they're young, okay, and the flocks and the herds giving suck are a care to me, and if they overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. So let my Lord pray, I pray you, pass over before his servant. I'll go on journey, and I'll pick up the rear. I'll go a little bit more slowly, more gently, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, till I come to you, my Lord, in Seir. Well, says Esau, let me now leave with you some of the folk that are with me. And he said, what's the need? Let me just find favor in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way into Seir. You get the impression here that there is still a joyful reunion, but maybe just a little bit of cautiousness. I won't say mistrust, but certainly a feeling of let's play this carefully. Jacob then journeyed to Sukkot. He built himself a house. He made booths for his cattle. And, that's the word Sukkot, of course. Therefore, the name of the place was called, well, what else? Sukkot. And Yaakov came in peace to the city of Shechem. We're going to hear more about Shechem, as you probably recall, which is in the land of Canaan when he came from Padan Aram, and he encamped before the city. He brought there, he brought all of his stuff, and then he bought the parcel of ground where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, the father of the man whose name is Shechem, for 100 pieces of what? Kesef, of course, money. It's interesting, in some English it's rendered 100 pieces of money, but it's pieces of silver. Okay, and there he erected an altar, calling it El Elohe Israel. El Elohe Israel, God, the God of Israel. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born unto Lachah, to Yaakov. This is the next chapter. So we're gonna switch gears. Here's Dinah. She goes out, it says, to see the daughters of the land. It sounds like what we're talking about here, she's going to have a girls' night out with the other females of the region. Shechem, meanwhile, a son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, he saw her. Now, this is interesting. It's kind of brusque, blunt. It says he saw her, he took her. That word is lekach, and it's the way a man takes a wife or takes a woman physically, sexually. And I guess if we didn't have any doubt, it says, and he lay with her, and he humbled her. And the root word there is anah, and it has this meaning of to defile or afflict or humble. We've seen it before. And his soul did cleave unto Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov, and he loved the damsel, and he spoke comfortingly unto her. So, was it rape? Was it consensual? Again, there's a certain ambiguity in the way this is labeled. But obviously, it's not quite as one-sided as we would expect a rape to be, because it says he loved her and he spoke comfortingly to her. So, of course, we've all seen situations that might say, yeah, you know, there are all kinds of ways to read this. But in any case, Shechem spoke unto his father Hamor, and he said, hey, I really like this woman. Get her as a wife for me. Now, Jacob heard that he, this man Shechem, had defiled Dinah, his daughter. His sons were with the cattle in the field, and Yaakov held his peace until they came. You can imagine he's got something to say, or worse. Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob, to Yaakov, and speak with him. And the sons of Yaakov came in from the field when they heard what was going on. Hey, Dad's talking to this fellow. Let's see what's happening here. The men were pretty upset, and they were very wroth, it says, because Shechem had done a very vile deed in Israel by lying with Yaakov's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. So, literally, he took Dinah's virginity. How consensual was it? That's the thing. She may have eventually submitted, but we don't know. But we do know that it does not sit well with Yaakov or with her brothers. So Hamor spoke with them, and they said, look, the soul of my son Shechem, he longs for your daughter. I pray you, give her unto him to be a wife. And y'all could do this. You can make marriages with us. The root word there of the marriages is this father-in-law term. You will be father-in-laws to you and vice versa. You give your daughters unto us. We'll take our daughters unto you. So this will be a great big happy extended family. Y'all can dwell with us. The land will be before you. Dwell and trade here and get yourself some possessions here. We're making you an offer that, well, you can refuse it, but hopefully you won't. Shechem then said unto her father and her brethren. So this is Shechem addressing Yaakov and the rest of the family. He says, let me find favor in your eyes, and what you say unto me, I will give. You name the bride price, in other words, and I'll do it. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I'll give according as you say unto me. But just give me the damsel to wife. I really want her. Give her to me. Now, the sons of Yaakov answered. This is interesting as well. Notice it's not Jacob that answers, it's the sons that seem to be answering here. And they answered Shechem and Hamor his father with guile. With guile they spoke, because he had defiled Dinah their sister, and said unto him. Now, it sounds like, is this all of the brothers? You certainly get that impression at this point. We know that later, we're going to see this in just a couple of verses, there are two of them that are going to stand out. But at this point, it sounds like there's more than that, who are answering with guile, because they had defiled Dinah, their sister. So they see this as an excuse to answer untruthfully. They said, well, we can't do this thing to give our sister to anyone who is uncircumcised, because that would be a reproach unto us. You know, we can't have her being... we can't have her laying with someone who's uncircumcised. kindly put it that way. Here, on this one condition, we will consent to you. If you will be like we are, every male of you be circumcised, then we'll give our daughters unto you. We'll take your daughters unto us. We'll dwell with you. We'll become one people, a people echad. But if you won't hearken to us, if you won't be the circumcision types, well, then we'll take our daughter and just, we'll be gone. Okay? Color us out of here. Their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So you have the king and the prince essentially listening to this and saying, okay, yeah, we'll get all the guys. We'll give an edict here. We'll tell everybody, take out your you-know-what, get yourself a knife and shuck that foreskin off. And guess what? The young man did not defer to do this thing, it said, because he had delight in Yaakov's daughter. He was honored above all the house of his father. So, sounds like Shechem was a popular fellow in the royal household. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of the city. They spoke with the men, and they said the following. These are peaceable men. Boy, if you hear this and you read this, the irony just drips off the page, doesn't it? And it's, in a way, I read it, you know, how many thousands of years later, and it's almost embarrassing and sad, the level of guile and deception. Here's poor Shechem. He thinks he's going to get the girl. And I'm happy to do this. I want to be circumcised like all these other folks. This is great. We're going to have a nice, happy, extended family here. These men are peaceable with us. He sounds like, something we've seen in the 20th and now in the 21st century. These are peaceable men. Hey, what could possibly go wrong? Therefore, let them dwell with us in the land. We'll trade here. Behold, the land is large enough for all of us. We can accommodate some extra folks. Let us take their daughters to us for wives. Let us give them our daughters. Here is the condition. No, this one condition. Only this will they consent with us. And that is, if every male among us is circumcised, just as they are. Hey, look, shall not their cattle and their substance and all their beasts be ours? Only let us consent unto them that they will dwell with us. So you read this and you think, okay, there seems to be a little, maybe hint at least, of duplicity, or maybe not. Okay, shall not their cattle and all their beasts be ours? Well, we are going to have the outside cattle and sheep and goats and so forth. Certainly, as one who's now raised animals, I can see the idea of how that would strengthen the bloodline, and that might be what they're referring to here. So it's not clear, but it says, shall not their beasts be ours? Well, unto Hamor and to Shechem, his son hearkened. Everyone that went out of the gate that day. So, all the men listened, and they in fact did as they were requested. Every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. So it came to pass on the third day. So it seems like, I guess you can kind of gather here, it takes a couple of days for fellows to get recovered from this. No, more than a couple of days. On the third day, they're still in pain. And that's what it says. The two sons of Yaakov, two of them anyway, Simeon and Levi, Shimon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, they took, both of them, their sword. They came unto the city by stealth, unaware, and they slew every single male in the whole stinking town. They slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, Lefi Cherev, and they took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and they went forth. Sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They had made their sister Tamei. Now, notice this wording too. It says the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city. When I read that, we've just seen the sons of Jacob, two of them explicitly, Shimon and Levi, that did the deed. But it does sound like the rest of them were aware of it, and in fact, now they're going to go in behind and despoil the city, take the prize from their victory. They took their flocks, their herds, and their asses, everything that was in the city, and all that which was in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives too. They took them captive, and they spoiled everything that was in the house. Now, Yaakov, as you might expect, well, maybe not, but turns out he is livid. He says to Shimon and Levi, you have troubled me. You, in fact, have made me odious. You've made me a stink to the inhabitants of the land, even the Canaanites and the Perizzites. So, right, these are not necessarily what you call honorable folks, that's clear, but I stink now even unto them. And know what else? Besides, I'm few in number. They'll gather themselves together against me, and they'll smite me. I'll be destroyed. Me and oh, you guys too. All of my whole house. Well, they said, should he be allowed to deal with our sister like a harlot? Okay, the next chapter begins this way. Elohim then said to Yaakov, we don't know how long this takes, but probably not very, "Arise, get up to Beth-El, dwell there. Make there an altar unto Elohim, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." Yaakov then said to his house and all that were with him, "Look, get rid of all your strange Elohim that are among you." Now remember, they've just despoiled a pagan city. So get rid of all that crap. Purify yourselves. Change your clothes. Let's arise and go up to Beth-El. And there I'll build an altar unto Elohim, who answered me in my day of distress. Yeah, that earlier day of distress. I guess this is now another one. "And went with me in the way which I went." So they gave unto Yaakov all the foreign gods which were in their hands, all the rings which were in their ears. So they took all the booty. Yaakov hid them under the terebinth tree, which was by Shechem. And they journeyed. And the terror of Elohim was upon all the cities that were round about. They'd heard the story. They did not pursue after the sons of Yaakov. So Yaakov came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan. The same is also called Bethel. He and all the people that were with him. And there he built the altar he was told to and had said he would build. He called the place El, Bethel, because there had Elohim revealed himself to him when he fled from the face of his brother. Now here it says, Deborah, Rivka's nurse, died. She was buried below Bethel, under the oak. And the name of that place was called Alon Bachuth. And it says, "Then Elohim appeared unto Yaakov again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him." And here he says to him, to Yaakov, "Look, your name is Jacob, but your name shall not be called Jacob anymore. But Israel shall be your name." And he called his name Israel. So, and interesting, this is one of those things that I've always thought was kind of, not just funny or even ironic, certainly not a mistake, but it does raise eyebrows, right? Yah says, "Your name shall not be called anymore Yaakov. Your name henceforth is Israel." And yet, and I've usually made a big point of this, and I'll do it again, because we're going to read through the rest of the Torah, the rest of the prophets. You're going to see over and over and over and over again, yes, the man is called Israel, but he is also still called, and he is probably he is the primary example in Scripture of one who gets renamed, and the name, it sticks, but it isn't used universally. I mean, look at Abraham. After Abram is made Abraham, he is Abraham, and that's how we know him. But in this case, Yaakov and Israel, they're not quite interchangeable. There are some very specific, I think, indications that each name gives. But it's kind of fascinating that he is, in fact, or at least the physical man, I'll put it that way, is, in fact, called Yaakov again sometime, as are his offspring. And honestly, the best, and it's not 100% consistent, because there seems to be kind of a little bit of an ambiguity even in the way, and think about it, this is the way we behave too. It's kind of like when Israel is behaving in the spiritual sense of the people of promise, that they're called Israel, and the sons of Yaakov are given that name Israel. And yet, when they act kind of like they don't want the blessings, then the name is Yaakov, and it's still used. So even though Yah says, "Your name is not to be called Yaakov anymore," I guess what that means is Yaakov didn't always live up to what he should have. All right, then Elohim said to him, "Ani El Shaddai." Now it's rendered as, "I am God Almighty," but I like El Shaddai, the all-sufficient one. But again, you'll see it translated, El Shaddai, as God Almighty. "Be fruitful and multiply." Well, there's the very first command. "A nation and a company of nations shall be of you, and kings shall come out of your loins. And the land which I gave to your fathers, unto Abraham and Isaac, well, to you will I give it, and to your seed after you will I give the land." It's a repetition of a promise we know well. Elohim went up from him in the place where he spoke with him. Now Yaakov set up a pillar in the place where he, Yah, spoke with him, pillar of stone. He poured out a drink offering on it, and he poured oil on it, and he called the name of that place where El spoke with him, well, we already knew this, Bethel. And there they journeyed from Bethel. There was still some ways to come to Ephrath, and Rachel She's with child at this point. She went into labor. She travailed. And in fact, it was hard labor. As a matter of fact, it was deadly hard labor. Came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said to her, "Fear not, for there is also a son for you." And it came to pass, because as her soul was departing, yep, in fact, she did die, that she called the name of the son who came out of her as she was dying, Ben-Oni. Literally, the son of my sorrow, the son of my trouble. But her father, his father, her husband, Yaakov, now Israel, called his name Ben-Yamin. All right, we know the name, son of my right hand, Ben-Yamin. Rachel died. She was buried there on the way to Ephrath. The same is called, we've heard of this place, Bet-Lechem, the house of bread, Bethlehem. Yaakov set up a pillar upon her grave. This same is the fact, in fact, the pillar of the gate, the grave of Rachel or Rachel unto this day. And now notice, it says, and Israel journeyed. Isn't that interesting? I believe what we'll find is that is the first time after the renaming that Scripture refers to this man with a new name. Notice, just two verses earlier, it's Jacob set up a pillar upon her grave. That's where her grave is unto this day. And it says, then Israel journeyed. He spread his tent beyond Migdal Eder. And it came to pass, while Israel dwelt in the land, in that land specifically, that Reuben went up and he lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, one of his father's four wives. And by the way, this is a really negative thing, as you might suspect, and it's going to cost Reuben big time. His dad is not going to forget it. And that too is not surprising. So it's while Israel dwelt in the land, Reuben lay with Bilhah, and Israel heard of it. Again, notice the name. Now it says, the sons of Jacob were 12. And we're going to get a listing and who the moms are and how it's going to play out in just a second. But it's kind of interesting that we get this story, then we hear the sons of Jacob were 12 after twice Israel was the name that was used. The sons of Leah, okay, we know them. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, at least for now. Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And Issachar, these were born later, and Zebulun. The sons of Rachel, Joseph, and now most recently, the one that she gave birth to on her deathbed, Benjamin. The sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali. The sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob that were born to him in Padan Aram. Now it says, and Jacob came unto Isaac, his father, to Mamre, to Kiriath Arba. The same place is called Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. And now we're told the days of Isaac. He lived to be 180 years old. And Isaac died. And he was gathered unto his people, old and full of days. And Esau and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. So one thing we know, and that is that Isaac got to see his sons reunited, and they were there to bury him. Actually, we don't know that he saw them, but I think it's probably a... we don't know that for sure. He might have heard about it afterwards. I think at least he got to know that there was a reconciliation before he died. Again, a lot of things Scripture is silent on, but there's some speculation which seems to make sense. It would be nice to know if he ever actually saw his sons together again. Doesn't say that. Now, these, it tells us, are the generations of Esau, a.k.a. Edom. So we're going to have all of chapter 36, a genealogy of the man Esau, and ultimately of those that are called the Edomites. Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan. And remember, that was not a great thing so far as Isaac and Rivka were concerned. First Adah, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, then Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite. Now, and then finally he took Basemat, the daughter of Ishmael, sister of Nebaoth. Here comes the progeny. Adah, the first wife, bore to Esau Eliphaz. Basemat bore Reuel. Oholibamah bore Yeush and Yalam and Korah. These are the sons of Esau that were born to him in the land of Canaan. Now, Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, all the souls of his house, all his cattle, his beasts, all his possessions, things that he'd gathered in the land of Canaan, and he went into a land away from his brother Yaakov. So this is the land of also called Edom. Because their substance was too great for all of them to dwell together, the land of their sojournings couldn't bear them because literally of the load of their cattle on the land. Esau dwelt in the mountain and the land of Seir. Esau, it says, is Edom. And here we go. These are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in the mountain land of Seir. Now notice, and I'll make this observation, these are repeated in 1 Chronicles chapter 35 at the end. So this is not the only place we see this genealogy. But here we go. These are the names of Esau's sons. Eliphaz, son of Adah, the wife of Esau. Reuel, son of Basemath. Sons of Eliphaz, well, they were Teman, Omar, Zopho, Gatam, and Kenaz. There was a woman named Timna. She was a concubine to Esau's son Eliphaz. She bore to Eliphaz. Now, here's a name we're going to remember, and I think this is important. Amalek. And, of course, we know that Amalek is not one of the more honored names in the book. And Yah has some problems with Amalek, as we're going to see. These are the sons of Adah, Esau's wife. Now, these are the sons of Reuel. Nahat, Zerah, Shema, Mizah, the sons of Basemath, Esau's wife. These were the sons of Oholibama, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, Esau's wife. She bore to Esau the following, Yeush, Yalam, and Korah. These are the chiefs, it says, of the sons of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz, firstborn, the chief of Teman, the chief of Omar, chief of Zepho, chief of Kenaz, of Korah, the chief of Gatam, the chief of Amalek. These are the chiefs that came of Eliphaz in the land of Edom, the sons of Adah. These then are the sons of Reuel, Esau's son, the chief of Nahat, of Zerah, Shema, Mizah. These are the chiefs that came from Reuel in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Esau's wife, Basemath. And finally, these are the sons of Oholibama, Esau's wife, the chief of Yeush, of Yalam, of Korah. These are the chiefs. So these are repetitions of names we've already heard, but it's pointing out these are chiefs of these various tribes. They came from these three different wives. Oholibama, this one, the daughter of Anah, Esau's wife. These, it says, are the sons of Esau. These are the chiefs. Again, the same is Edom. So here is the genealogy of Edom. These are the sons of Seir, the Horite, the inhabitants of the land. So now we're going to get the other ones that are interfacing with them here. Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, and Anah, and Dishon, and Azer, and Dishon. Dishon and Dishon. Sounds similar, but there's a different ending. These are the chiefs that came of the Horites, the children of Seir, in the land of Edom. The children of Lotan, Hori, and Tamam, and Lotan's sister was Timnah. These then are the children of Shobal, Alvan, Mahanath, and Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. These are the children of Zebion, Aya, and Anah. That's that same word that means defiled. Interesting. This is Anah, who found the hot springs in the wilderness as he fed the ashes of Zibeon, his father. These are the children of Anah. He had Dishon, Oholibama, the daughter of Anah. These are the children of Dishon, Hemdan, Eshban, Ithran, and Sharon. These are the children of Azer, Bilhah, Bilhan, Za'avan, and Akan, the children of Dishon, Uz, and Aran. These, it says, are the chiefs that came from the Horites, chief of Lotan, of Shobal, Zibeon, the chief of Anah, of Dishon, of Ezer, and Dishan. These are the chiefs that came from the Horites, according to their chiefs in the land of Seir. And these, it says, are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom. Before, and this seems to be important, it's making a special note here, before there were any kings that reigned over the children of Israel. So these are going to be the kings that proceeded from the time of Genesis, and they're literally going to run and reign for all of the time up until when? During the time of the judges, these kings will still be reigning in the land of Edom, because it's not till after the time of the judges that we enter into the era of the prophets and the story of Samuel, and of course then the first of the kings, Saul, of the children of Israel. So Bela, meanwhile, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom. That city was called Dinhabah. Bela died. Yobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his stead. Then he died. Hushan of the Temanites reigned in his stead. When he died, Hadad, son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. His city was called Avit. Hadad died. Samlah of Masrekah reigned in his stead. He died. Shaul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. Then Shaul died. Baal Hanan, son of Achbor, took his place. Baal-Hanan, son of Achbor, died. Hadar reigned in his stead. The name of that city was Pau. His wife's name was Mehetabel, the daughter of Matred, daughter of Me-Zahab. And these, it says, are the names of the chiefs that came from Esau, out of Esau, according to their families, after their places by their names. The chief of Timnah, the chief of Avlah, of Yethreth, the chief of Aholibamah, of Elah, the chief of Pinon, of Kenaz, Taman, the chief of Mibzar, the chief of Magdiel, the chief of Iram. These, it says, are the chiefs of Edom, according to their habitations in the land of their possession. And there it is. This is the last verse in the portion. A long chapter, a lot of names, and of course, what we're going to see is Edom has a special place. Later on, the children of Israel are going to be told, this land has been given to the Edomites. There are certainly some differences, some distinctions, but by and large, obviously they play a major role, and the genealogy is well documented here. This is Esau, it says, the father of the Edomites.